Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialist of America. Today, we are joined by Shiv Soin from Fridays for Future NYC and Alex Pelletieri from the Youth DSA, YDSA. We're going to be talking about the massive climate strikes that happened in New York City two Fridays ago, the actions that have happened in between, and what is next for the youth climate strike movement. But first, we have the headlines with Jack Devine.
Yo, what's good, New York? This is Jack Devine with Revolutions Per Minute's headlines, brought to you by The Thorn. The New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America announced its first round of endorsements for the 2020 state election cycle. In State Senate District 25, the organization has endorsed Jabari Brisport, whose run for city council in 2017 was the best third-party performance in New York City since Letita James's Working Families Party's victory in 2003. Before announcing his run for state senate, Jabari was on Revolutions Per Minute this past July. Go to revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com to check out that interview. In State Assembly District 51, NYC DSA has endorsed Marcela Mitienes, a longtime Sunset Park resident, board member of Tenants PAC NY, and longtime tenant organizer with Neighbors Helping Neighbors. In State Assembly District 54, NYC DSA has endorsed Boro Santos, who has served as chief of staff for Julia Salazar. Boris has been involved in North Brooklyn as an organizer, teacher, and activist throughout his entire adult life. And in State Assembly District 57, NYC DSA has endorsed Farah Souffrant, a longtime Crown Heights resident, tenant organizer, and union nurse. Farah credits her work with the Universal Rent Control campaign, which passed historic rent regulation in Albany earlier this year, with influencing her decision to run for office. Additionally, the New York City Democratic Socialists of America have made the public power campaign a citywide priority for the organization. The plan is centered around democratizing the ownership of energy utilities in New York City and taking it away from the private capital of Con Edison. Now back to Lee Zishi and our coverage of the historic climate strikes that took place all across the globe.
This is Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns, and you are listening to Revolutions Per Minute. You just heard our headlines brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group. Today, we are joined by two youth activists. Let's start with you, Shiv. Can you introduce yourself, tell people how old you are, and let them know how you got involved with Fridays for Future, which is one of the lead organizations for the youth climate strikes last week?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Shiv Soin. I'm 19 years old. I use he, him pronouns, and I'm currently a second-year student at New York University. And I'm also one of the core organizers for Fridays for Future in New York City. So I really got involved with the climate movement. I guess I'd like to say that I had like a glass-shattering moment a few years ago. So when I was 11 years old in 2011, my grandmother passed away, and my entire family is from New Delhi, India. So I went to India, and I ended up getting hospitalized because of the air quality there. That, coupled with my increasingly severe environmental allergies, led to a peak where I realized that these things I'm experiencing aren't unique. This is something that's happening to millions of people across the country, across the world. And the fact that that isn't unique is why I'm in this fight. So Fridays for Future isn't necessarily an organization. It's a movement, and a decentralized movement especially. And I think that's crucial to understand that we're operating in our areas. So here in New York City, and there's dozens, hundreds throughout the country and throughout the world, to really make sure that we take into consideration the needs of our communities so that we come together and, like we did on September 20th, throw one of the largest climate mobilizations in history.
And what about you, Alex? Can you talk a little bit how you got involved with YDSA and maybe even what YDSA is for people who don't know?
Sure. Sure, yeah. So my name is Alex. I'm 19. I'm a sophomore at Hunter College, and I use he, him pronouns. I've been involved in both DSA and YDSA for about 2.5 years now. YDSA is the youth and student section of DSA. We have chapters at several colleges and high schools across the country. Currently in New York City, we have chapters at 3 schools. So I got involved in the movement after the 2016 Bernie Sanders campaign, and he really made me realize that our power and, you know, change in our society does not happen from the top down, it happens from the bottom up. And, you know, to make the changes that we want and to make the changes that are necessary for us to continue to exist in this world, we have to create a mass movement of people, and especially young people. I don't think there can be a revolution without student and youth involvement, and the climate strikes that happened last week are really a testament to that.
Yeah, and I'm excited to dig more deep into that and what went into all that organizing and what will come next. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. As you heard, today is the first day of our pledge drive. So if you support this kind of content, we actually interviewed one of the people who started some of the strikes in New York City, Alexandra Villasenor, way back in January. Her mom told me at the strike that this was one of her very first interviews. So if you appreciate this kind of content, you know, people that who are giving voices to people working on these issues, organizing every day, you know, please consider becoming a WBAI buddy. We can't do this without you. You can call into pledge at 516-620-3602. Again, that number is 516-620-3602. Or go to give2wbai.org or text to WBAI. You can text WBI 41444. And, you know, as you also heard in the headlines, we interviewed Jabari Brisport a while ago. We've been doing all this coverage on public power, the things that are people are actually really demanding in the strike. So if you appreciate this kind of content, please give to us. So we are going to be talking about the massive youth climate strikes that happened about a week and a half ago on September 20th. There are reports that there were over 300,000 people that marched in New York City, and the march began with a rally in Foley Square. So let's go to some sound from that massive rally in Foley Square on September 20th.
Get Chicano, Apache Mama, we go, we are you, we are you.
Takahi, that means greetings. Greetings to all of you. Takahi, White House, our friends. We are the first indigenous peoples to encounter Columbus. We are the Taino people, and we're here representing our islands. As an elder, I'm really proud to be here and see so many young faces. This is good, and you gotta keep going. You gotta keep it up, all right? Because you've gotta tell the politicians, and you've gotta tell the governments, all right, that this is your inheritance, and an inheritance, it's got to be turned over in good shape. I come from an island that was devastated by Hurricane Maria. And we also have, in the Bahamas, Hurricane Dorian. Thousands of people have died. The devastation is still going on. And it's underestimated if you think that they're going to recover so quickly. You have got to stand strong, young people. We call you Guailis, Guailis. Because you're smart, because you have brand new ideas, because you will change the future. And you will help us save Mother Earth. Everyone up here is dedicated to this. I'm here because of you.
My name is Marisol Rivera. I am 13 years old. I was New York born and raised, Puerto Rican, and a Sandy survivor. So my mom had came into my room and told me that it wasn't safe to be home, that we had to leave. So to me, as a child, as a young child itself, it just didn't sound right that I was being told that my home isn't a safe place to be at the moment. I remember after getting out of my bed, I turned around to watch a huge amount of water fall onto my bed, along with the ceiling. So in that very bed that I had just laid in seconds ago, the ceiling was already on. So to me, that was traumatizing because I watched my bed get crushed. I watched where I had laid my entire life destroyed in seconds.
So I want to say, when I first learned about the climate crisis as a kid, like, I would lie awake at night, my heart pounding, when I thought about what this would mean for my people. I couldn't get the images out of my head, right? People, what people would do to each other when they didn't have food, when they didn't have water, and when they sought sanctuary and were faced with cages and guns instead. And I felt alone and small and powerless. And I know that that is the story that so many young people are feeling right now. We've grown up seeing the political establishment fail us. And for twice as long as I have been alive on this planet, we have known about the crisis. For just as long, the wealthy and the powerful have profited off of pollution, have lied to millions of people about the science, have choked our democracy with their big oil dollars and stolen our futures. Today, this generation is taking over. Our days of waiting for justice, our days of waiting for action, our days of waiting to be heard are over. Am I right? Today we are putting our feet in the streets and we are not stopping until we get it done. Today kids don't have to feel small and alone and powerless because we have a movement that is globally shaking the roots of our society that is getting millions of people involved in action. And striking is how we can stop the worst of the climate crisis and get a Green New Deal.
And so that was Varshini Prakash, who is one of the co-founders of the Sunrise Movement, speaking at the climate strike on September 20th at Foley Square. We also heard a bit from Sachem Hawkstorm, who was leading an indigenous land recognition. He is of the Skaticoke Nation, the original people, and we are in their occupied territory. And thank you, 350.org and Alexi Wagner, for that sound from the climate strike in Foley Square. So, Shiv, I think I talked to you a week before this. We were at the UN. Greta Thunberg was there. So, of course, there was this like swarm of media, and I kind of talked to you and you're like, yeah, we're gonna see how this goes. You know, we've been doing a lot of work, but we're not really sure how it's going to go. What are your reflections from the day?
I'm still a little overwhelmed from what actually happened. So I told you when we talked the week before that our permits only allowed 10 to 12,000 people attending. And we made all our preparations in the estimates of 10 to 12,000. 10 to 12,000 people did not show up that day. 315,000 people did. So in my reflections and realizing that, our entire core team was just stunned. And I wanted to pull us all aside, and a group of us were like, let's just walk around and see what we just did. So we walked all around with our organizers just to understand the camaraderie that was there throughout Battery Park and what exactly was happening. Because that day, we broke the record of the world's largest climate mobilization. And that was something that was really, we really understood. So going in the future and our reflections for that day were one that we have the power to do this. We chose the day September 20th globally because on the 21st was the UN Youth Climate Summit at the United Nations. And on the 23rd was the UN General Assembly to discuss climate action. So we chose this day, we chose this to really set forth what we wanted to see. And we really showed up. We closed down Broadway in Lower Manhattan that day, and that was what we wanted. So going forward, we want to continue to keep doing that, making sure that our numbers grow, making sure that we continue to hold our world leaders accountable. Because until we do that, our world leaders are just going to keep continuing what they're doing. And September 20th was such a massive springboard, and that's only going to make us keep going and keep fighting harder.
What about you, Alex? What were you feeling that day, seeing that many people around?
Yeah, so, like, to be honest, initially I was concerned that the strike would have more of a liberal and reformist framework, but I was really happy and really surprised to see that a lot of young people there seem to understand the need for system change. They seem to understand that, you know, this is something that goes beyond just passing a Green New Deal or passing other environmental reforms, that this, the capitalism, the system that we live in, is inherently causing this problem, and that we won't truly have climate justice, and we can't truly stop climate change under capitalism.
Yeah, and that's actually something I definitely noticed, too. I mean, first of all, I got out of the subway kind of near City Hall, and, you know, I've been organizing for 6 years around climate, trying to stop fracking and frack gas infrastructure, and most of the time it's really depressing. I mean, a lot of people I know are being poisoned. I feel like we're losing a lot of the time. I'm seeing, you know, infrastructure go to the ground. But just seeing that amount of students just pouring out and the energy that they brought to it, I started crying even before I got to Foley Square. But when I was walking, I was marching with a lot of DSA people, just noticing how many people outside of the DSA block too, who also had, you know, signs about system change, about, about how capitalism is part of a problem. You know, a few years ago, I think it was in 2015 or 2014, there was, the last really big massive climate march in New York City. I think it was 2014. You know, there was a lot of people, but you definitely didn't see that, you know, the same kind of amount of signs in that way. And also, if you think about too, I think the time frames, I mean, that march was planned for almost a year, I think, and had, you know, major, you know, of course there was a lot of big organizations that supported this, but this was really started and organized by youth. Can you talk a little bit about what went into organizing this kind of day? Like, what was your structures like, and how did you get this many people to turn out?
Yeah, absolutely. So before I touch on that, I wanted to just say about like the system change, not climate change thing, that was a chant that we were really working on. That was something that was constantly said. And in terms of the energy, we were really cognizant about that because climate grief is really a real thing. There's times when our organizers are just so depressed because it feels like we're fighting such a massive, massive thing that we can't even touch. So, and we are. And having a rally, having the march be so positive was something that we really wanted because at the end of the day, we need that positive energy in order to make that fight and in order to actually create systematic change. Now, in terms of actually planning, it was a lot. It very much was. So we had a core team of 15 organizers who were ages from 14 to 19. And we also had hundreds of organizers working with us on this for months. We also had adult allies who were really great in making sure that our strike went exactly with our vision, what we needed. So PCM, 350, Avas, all these great organizations really made sure that our vision came true. And that also speaks to the fact that this strike was also the first intergenerational strike we've had in this movement. So young people really led the way. But we had amazing adult allies really work with us on that. And this was just months of really just grinding everything out, making sure that we had permits, making sure that we had speakers. So Varshini was one of our speakers, and that was somebody who we loved. And part of our reflection, we're going to definitely have her back. I was getting goosebumps just listening to it again right now. So just making sure that the strike was okay, making sure that everybody was okay and healthy that day was also another really big concern. But young people really led the way on this. And something else that I really reflected and something else that was really a big reflection after we finished the strike was the camaraderie within us. So we really created a family and a network within our organizers, the hundreds of us, that really was so positive, so healthy. And we still are so blown away by what we were able to create. And it wasn't something we sat down with like a pen and paper and planned it out. It was, we were so united against this goal, towards this goal of actually fighting for the strike, for our demands to make sure that they were met, that we really built what we wanted to see in our government, in our society. And that's something that we're continuing. So this isn't the first strike that's ever happened. This isn't going to be the last one either. And we're going to continue going like that because if we don't have that camaraderie and what we're expecting our governments to do within ourselves, we can't expect anything. So as back to reflections and back to what we're doing, we really are going to keep going with that. And we're so excited to do that.
And you briefly mentioned the demands. Like, what were the demands of the march?
Yeah, so we had a national, international coalition. They had their own separate demands. But in New York City, we had three. And once again, those were in relation to the September 21st UN Youth Climate Summit and the 23rd UNGA. And those were, one, no more fossil fuels, so stopping all production of fossil fuels. And that leads to our second demand, which was a just transition and a green economy for everyone, but specifically frontline communities. And we really emphasize this one because a just transition is an absolute must if we have any hopes of actually getting out of this mess. And our third demand was holding fossil fuel executives and polluters accountable, which once again needs to happen if we have any hopes of fixing this.
And yeah, I saw a lot of that reflected in the speakers. You know, one, obviously having indigenous people lead off with the rally, you know, centering the voices of people who have been impacted by Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Maria. I mean, the amount of speakers there were at Battery Park, you know, that really addressed this issue, I think was really important. And Alex, you know, with kind of coming from YDSA, perspective, like what were the people that you marching with, you know, what were they there kind of demanding?
So I helped organize a contingent at Hunter College, which is where I go to school, and we certainly, you know, encourage as many YDSA members as possible to come, but we also wanted to open up to just students at Hunter College who aren't in YDSA. So we did a lot of flyering. We were able to work with you know, different coalitions on campus, such as 7K or Strike, to get professors to give excused absences, which, you know, thankfully a lot of them did. And, you know, for YDSA, I think we all agreed definitely on those demands. But, you know, just at the understanding that it is capitalism that is at the core of this issue, and that we're not going to be able to solve climate change while capitalism is still in existence.
And I want to go back a little bit now to like this idea of a strike and that as a tactic. You know, it's something that's been used by different movements in throughout history. Obviously, a lot of this climate strike rhetoric came from Greta, who is a, you know, a very young Swedish activist who, you know, started striking from schools. And then we started seeing other students do that, you know, late last year and, you know, all throughout the winter, and it's kind of been growing up through the summer and fall. Can you talk a little bit about striking as a tactic and why you've been focused on this?
Yeah, so I think that goes back to what I said about our core team. The ages are 14 to 19, and the average age is 16 and 17. So what that means with that age is that most of our organizers can't vote. And the way we live in a democracy, the way we express our voices is through voting for our representatives, voting for our officials. And these kids can't vote. So what else, what other option do they have other than to take to the streets and strike? And that itself is such a powerful message. And I think that is what I think there's a reason behind that. And it's the simplicity behind it. So having kids come outside to the streets with a sign that's demanding for action. We're not asking for something crazy. We're asking for our futures. We're asking for your own futures. So we're not asking for something selfish. At the end of the day, we want a future where we feel comfortable and that we can live in. We want a future for the generations ahead of us, but we also want a future for the generations that are here now. So striking is a really effective way to do that. And we planned it on September 20th, like I said, once again, for the UN General Assembly. So we closed Lower Manhattan 3 days before the UNGA. And that sent an extremely powerful message to our world leaders that we flooded New York City in anticipation for you to come. So you better get your act together and actually solve this crisis. And we've seen throughout in just American politics, in the presidential election, that young people are the ones driving them to make the climate crisis a centerpiece of their campaigns. And we've never seen before all major presidential candidates actually having a plan. However you feel about the plan, it's they have a plan. And that's all because of young people. So striking and the youth movement is powered by young people who just want a livable future. And that simplicity behind it makes it so powerful.
Any additions or reflections on that, Alex, about striking as a tactic and what it kind of felt like to be a part of something like that?
Yeah,
that big?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like strikes are one of the most effective ways to show the power of, you know, the working class, of the people united. And strikes are like truly ingrained in American history. And there's a lot of laws and freedoms that we enjoy today that happened because, you know, workers went on strike. And, you know, this a protest last week was relatively peaceful. But we have to remember that, you know, strikes in American history weren't always like that. People got beat up. People went to jail. People died. But, you know, going forward, we're going to need more strikes. You know, this definitely cannot be the last strike. And I think that going forward, as, you know, we continue to advance the struggles, our strikes are going to have to be more militant. We're going to have to shut down the means of production. You know, we're going to have to stop the flow of money. I think that's really the only way that we can create a true, genuine change.
Yeah, and I think like one really important thing to recognize too, I mean, like, you know, when a lot of fossil fuel industry workers were, you know, on the forefronts of these strikes, you know, mm-hmm. the Rockefellers gunned down striking coal miners, you yeah. know, that fought for, you know, our child labor laws, fought for, our, you know, the shorter work week, all these things. And so remembering that fossil fuel workers are actually a really important part of our striking history. And, you know, with that idea of a just transition that,
exactly.
you know, we're not like, oh, like we don't care about fossil fuel workers. We actually recognize that we're standing on their shoulders in a lot of this movement, you know, as we're taking to the streets. And so you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast apps. Today, we are talking with youth organizers about the climate strikes that filled New York City and will be continuing to happen. And if you appreciate this kind of content that goes deep into the organizing, you know, conversations that you're not having elsewhere, we're not, you know, only focusing on, you know, some of the iconic people that everyone wants to talk to. You know, we want to talk to the people who are on the ground organizing every day, you know, please become a sponsor of WBAI. We are listener sponsored and we couldn't be on the air without you. You can call at 516-620-3602. You can also go to give2wbai.org or text the word WBAI to 41444. We're on our first day of our October pledge drive, so please keep us going. Help us stay on the radio. Help us bring this important organizing content. Another part of the youth strike, and there was this really beautiful song that was, I believe, co-written by the Peace Poets. And the youth, you know, were saying, like, you know, we're going to strike for you. Will you strike for us? And kind of put out this call to adult allies to continue actions, you know, in between. You know, we had this big, huge mobilization on 9/20, and there was a call to kind of continue to do actions, which many different New York groups brought up in different ways to kind of bring this larger message directly to highlight individual kind of campaigns going on and issues. And one of those was a climate strike. It was called Climate Strike Utilities. And one of them happened on the Tuesday afterwards. And it was right in front of National Grid, and people were calling them out for wanting to raise our rates for frack gas infrastructure and also supporting the Williams pipeline. So here is Amber Ruther, who is a member of the DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group, at that Climate Strike Utilities press conference and action.
Climate Strike Utilities! Climate Strike Utilities! Climate Strike Utilities! Climate Strike Utilities! Climate Strike Utilities!
So it's clear that National Grid and Con Ed are holding our energy system hostage to push more frack gas infrastructure on us that we don't need. It is insane that they are able to ask their own customers to lobby for the Williams pipeline and refuse to allow people to heat their homes when we know we have the alternatives, when they could literally just buy more gas on the spot market. It's insane that they can lie and manipulate us. Con Ed is doing the same thing. They're declaring a moratorium in Westchester that's completely unfounded. And they're also causing blackouts and explosions that aren't preventable. They're playing Russian roulette with our lives by neglecting the grid until things break or explode. We cannot rely on Con Ed or National Grid to even provide basic safety and reliability, let alone. So, what do we do instead? Thankfully, there's an alternative. We can take matters into our own hands. We can have
have publicly owned Democratic Union School of Utilities. Woo! That will allow us to manage the retreat of gas infrastructure that we need, not just build more of it and pass the cost on the ratepayers when it becomes a stranded asset. With public power, we can build the Green New Deal that's equitable, safe, and affordable for everyone. So what does that look like? Well, we already have the largest publicly owned utility in the state. It's called the New York Power Authority, and it was founded during the New Deal. What more appropriate institution to use to build the Green New Deal than the New York Power Authority? It already provides the most affordable energy in New York State, and that's because they are not funneling our dollars into the pockets of CEOs and investors. We need public power, and we don't need to rely on utilities like Con Ed to wait to save our planet until it's profitable for them. We can take matters into our own hands. They've passed the costs of their dangerous and extractive business model onto environmental justice communities and workers and ratepayers and taxpayers for far too long. It's time that we take the billions of profits that they steal from us to invest into the renewable energy future that we need to survive. Woo! What do we want?
Public power!
What do we want?
Public power!
When do we want it?
Now!
That was Amber Ruther of the New York City DSA Eco-Socialists outside of National Grid's headquarters in Brooklyn with a press conference calling out National Grid for supporting the Williams Pipeline. It was people bringing the youth climate strike message directly, you know, to these utilities who want to spend our ratepayer dollars on things like expanding frack gas pipelines, pushing for the larger Williams Pipeline. As we heard in the headlines today, the public power has now become an officially endorsed DSA campaign in New York City and will be a priority moving forward. In addition to the climate strike utilities action at National Grid, there was also a climate strike utilities banner drop outside of Con Ed that said Con Ed's rate case fails the climate test. After the big climate march, there was a lot of people arrested outside the Bloomberg Global Business Forum, where people like Jamie Dimon, who are the head of Chase, you know, these kind of people who are very much a part of the problem, pretending to be a part of the solution. There was an additional action at a Chase Bank in Manhattan, where people did a kind of fun dance and rolled out a giant pipeline that said stop the Williams Pipeline. There were people in San Francisco who shut down blocks and blocks of the street with murals. Also lots of actions in Washington, D.C. And then a week after the large march on the 20th, there was the community strike in Sunset Park, which is against the gentrification of Sunset Park in Industry City. And it was, you know, a march against very specifically against capitalism and colonialism. So this is kind of, you know, what we're seeing after this really large mobilization. Shiv, what does it seem, you know, you kind of put this call out and then to see people respond, how does that feel?
It feels necessary and great that after the New York City mobilization that we're continuing to see that. So September 20th was part of a global week of action, and it ended with the Earth Day strike in Brooklyn and Sunset Park, like you said, on the 27th. So this needs to continue to keep happening, and we aren't going to get our demands met by one strike on September 20th. We're going to get our demands met by consistently pressuring our representatives, our elected officials to take action, by continuing to hold these strikes, by making sure that our voices are heard. Because as kids, we've always been told that we're stupid, that we don't have a voice. And now we're seeing that kids are realizing that we have our own bully pulpit that we can make on our own through social media, through literally closing down the streets. So we're continuing to see this happen. And in order to make our demands met, we need to continue to keep doing this. So the fact that this is happening in New York City is inspiring, and it's only going to make us keep fighting harder.
Yeah, and Alex, so how do we kind of make the demands of the climate strike reality, and specifically some of these ones like they're talking about in Sunset Park of addressing capitalism and colonialism as part of, you know, the root of what is causing this ecological crisis?
Yeah, so I was fortunately I was able to be at the event at Sunset Park. I had to leave before the march, unfortunately, but you know, that was a really great event because it tied in, you know, Industry City rezoning, which would, you know, continue the gentrification of Sunset Park, and as you said, it was an explicitly anti-capitalist march. But you know, capitalism, I think, will be defeated when, you know, millions of people rise up and say that this is literally our future you're talking about. And, you know, we cannot continue to have this divide between the 99% and the 1%. And it's, you know, where as much as we march, you know, as good as our demands are, we have to remember that the capitalist class won't concede simply because we ask them to. You know, we have to force them to. We have to give them no other option. And I think that, you know, strikes and boycotts are our way that we do this, where we hit them where it hurts. We hit them where they get their stream of revenue, where they get their money.
Is there any organizing in particular that YDSA is doing around climate work right now?
Yeah, for sure. So there's we've definitely been doing a lot of work around the Green New Deal and organizing for that in New York City. And our NYU chapter of YDSA is actually having an event this coming weekend, which is a Green New Deal teach-in, which is happening in Brooklyn at 387 Melrose Street this coming Saturday, October 5th, from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. So, you know, if anyone is interested in being involved in YDSA and, you know, learning more about how we as young people can fight for against climate change, I would strongly encourage you to go to that event.
And Shiv, do you have any advice? You know, I mean, obviously there's a core group of people that are kind of very committed to this in New York City, but what if you're, you know, someone who lives in like the suburbs and you're like the one kid going to your, you know, town hall, or maybe you live in a very rural area that's like very fossil fuel heavy? Like, what are some of the lessons you've learned from this? And what do you think, you know, if someone's just starting out and they don't have a crew to start organizing with, how do they get started?
Yeah, absolutely. This is something that we're really cognizant of in New York City, that we are given such an innate ability to be able to communicate with people and have people just come in one central area and be able to advocate with the city hall that is more willing to listen than some other cities. So my advice would be pretty simply just don't be afraid to get involved. And these conversations are extremely powerful. To just have conversations with your friends, start that opening that line of dialogue. And when we start doing that, you will be able to listen to your friends, communicate to them, because the second they really understand what the climate crisis really is, they're going to want to take action. And an issue that we're seeing throughout the country is a lack of education in the climate crisis as a whole. Because I went to public school and I learned about the climate crisis in depth by me reading it independently. The last time it was talked about in my K-12 system was fifth grade when we drew an Earth. That was it. And that is atrocious for the issue of our generation to only be discussed in elementary school for me. And some people, that's the lucky situation to even get it talked about in fifth grade. Sometimes it's not even being discussed. And we really need to start that line of education. And people I talked about this a little bit earlier, but don't undervalue your voice. One voice really makes a difference. And if you live in these communities, if you are the person that is going to your city councilor, that's going to your member of Congress, that's going to your senator, and is telling them that they need to take action, there's a lot that can happen through that. And one of the biggest pieces of advice that I can give, if you want to just take individual action right now, is just to call your member of Congress, your representatives, because it does make a difference. And I really learned that because I worked over the summer at my local representative, and we have to take tally whenever we get a call. So we have to take tally of an issue, and if you're a constituent of that representative. And depending on who the person of Congress, depending on the city official, at the end of the day, at the end of the week, they get the paper that says 10 of your constituents just called about the climate crisis. You kind of need to take action. That makes a difference. So if you are starting out small, if you're just getting started, I would absolutely, one, don't be afraid to use your voice. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, start educating the people around you. And two, call your representative. It's a small action that could make a big difference, and get your friends to call your member, your representatives too. But make sure it's your representative.
And in about 5 minutes, we're going to be opening up the phones to hear from all of our listeners. If you were out there marching, what was the day like for you? You know, what would you like to see moving forward? But I kind of want to go back to something you were talking about, Shiv, about contacting our representatives, because one of the things that I found kind of most interesting in what Greta was saying at Battery Park. I kind of particularly didn't pull a clip from, you know, her speech just because so much attention is being focused on this one woman, you know, one very young woman. Yet there's so many different leaders of this movement, and that kind of like icon worshiping is like, I think, kind of a dangerous thing. But she said, you know, that everywhere she goes, like the number of politicians that have their beautiful words, that like, want to take selfies with her and all the different youth, but the empty promises are the same, you know. So, you know, I saw people like Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio tweeting about this, like, we stand with the youth. Yet, really, the path we're still on here in New York City, while there's been some good movement, is still very much headed towards, you know, they're still putting our money towards fossil fuels. They're not putting enough money towards renewable.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit maybe about that frustration or like that tension that's there?
Yeah, we're all frustrated by that. It's something that we are constantly aware of and something that we're constantly fighting. And this isn't just on the city level in New York City. This happened at the United Nations, for example. So after we had the global the climate strike on September 20th, over 6 million people showed up throughout these strikes. The next day, the United Nations invited us, hundreds of the world's leading organizers, to a youth climate summit. And our impression was we were going to be able to get something ready for our world leaders coming on Monday. And they taught us how to make iMovie there. That was it. How to make viral videos, what iMovie is like, how to post on Instagram. And once again, these were the world leading climate activists, youth climate activists from all around the world. So it's something that and that was a big thing that we were talking about, that we're constantly being tokenized as the young person, give them a platform to speak for 3 to 5 minutes, and that's it. And young people are really pushing back on that. At the UN Climate Summit, a group of us just started pulling reporters. We got reporters from Vice, from a bunch of outlets, and started to talk to them and say, hey, this is ridiculous. We came here. And I was fortunate in the sense that this was in New York City, so all I had to do was catch a subway. One of my really good friends, her name is Isabella Falahi, she's from Indianapolis. She had to pay to come here and to learn how to do iMovie at the United Nations. To pay for that is a little obnoxious. And we have to make sure that we're holding our politicians accountable, and we're doing that by keeping them in check. And back to what you said about Greta too, that we also need to make sure that we don't have a celebrity of the movement. This is a decentralized movement at the end of the day. And by putting all the power, putting all the investment in one person, we take the power away from millions of indigenous activists who have been in this fight, not in the last 60 years, for thousands of years, for generations upon generations. Indigenous activists have been at the forefront of this fight. People of color, frontline communities, they've been at the forefront. And young people are pushing back on this narrative that the media is forcing upon us, that we are stupid, that we have one or two people who are leading this movement. There are thousands of people that are leading this movement, and young people are pushing back.
Yeah, like the indigenous youth of Standing Rock did not get a fist bump from Barack Obama, you know, in the same way. Any thoughts on that, Alex, before we open up the line to our callers?
Yeah, you know, just that when it comes to our elected officials and politicians, climate activism is in right now. It's popular. It's what gets votes. So naturally, a lot of politicians are going to flock to this. They're going to come to this because they want to, you know, put a picture of them at the climate strike on their Facebook page. But we have to differentiate who is here to get votes and who is genuinely here to make change, who are genuinely our allies. And we have to look at who are the ones giving politicians this money. Is it grassroots activists, or is it fossil fuel companies and Goldman Sachs? We have to look at who are these people before it became cool to support climate activism. You know, did they come up in politics as, you know, working for lobbyists, or as community organizers? You know, just because somebody is a Democrat, just because somebody says that they care about our issues, doesn't necessarily mean that they're our allies.
And now we're going to open up the lines to our callers. You can call in at 212-209-2877. Again, that's 212-209-2877. Let us know what it was like if you were out in the streets. And we've got a caller now live on WBI. You're now live on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, very good. I was there a couple of the Friday, 9:20, 9:20. It was an extraordinary event because I remember the events like the movement for nuclear disarmament back in the early 80s. I remember the big protest against the impending invasion of Iraq. But this was far more creative than those demonstrations, you know, 15 over 30, and as well as 30 years ago.
Thank you so much for calling in. And I mean, I think too, one thing, like I have a question. Do you think, I think in general, you know, we've had a very, like very white environmental movement for a very long time. Do you think the youth coming up organizing are kind of addressing some of these issues that maybe we haven't seen as much in the past, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So we've been really working towards that. And something that we realized as a reflection going forward is that our meetings are in Manhattan. And for our core strike meetings where we have hundreds of organizers come, they're always in Manhattan. And we realized that at the end of the day, to come from the Bronx to Central Park, where we usually have our meetings, that takes an hour to go back and one direction. So 2 hours back and forth. And for a student to do that means giving up their entire day for a 1 or 2 hour meeting. So we are working as hard as possible to move around our meetings to different boroughs throughout New York City, make this as accessible as possible, and to make sure that we're highlighting people of color, indigenous activists, and also people from different socioeconomic backgrounds, because activism as a whole, you have to have, the way it's been set up, you have to have some innate privilege, whether that's time, whether that's money. And we really want to make sure that we are able to bring the frontline communities, not to tokenize them as we've seen happen in the media, but actually give them a seat at the table, make sure that they're the ones leading the decision making, so because they know what's best for their communities. So to bring all these people in, so that's what New York City has been working on. And that's something we're going to continue to work on. And it's not an easy thing to do. It requires a lot of coordination. It requires a lot of tough discussions and a very uncomfortable discussion. But without it, our movement doesn't move forward.
And we've got another caller on the line. Caller, you are now live on WBAI.
Good afternoon. I also was at the 920 rally, only at Battery Park because I can't see very well. So it would have been difficult for me to find Foley Square and do the march, but I met people at Battery Park. I had a suggestion, and that is that you have all this motivation, you have all this motion going on. In terms of putting it to use in the meantime while you're waiting for the next general mobilization, if you form committees on a school-by-school or school district by school district basis, when you're talking about like Nassau, Westchester, spreading out into the burbs, look at the possibility of doing things like switching schools over to be reusable energy, because most, especially in the suburbs, a lot of school districts have enough space where on a high school you could set up your own wind towers and the school no longer draws from the grid energy that's produced with coal or oil, but actually creates energy with solar panels and wind turbines, and then the excess overnight feeds into the grid, displacing oil and coal-created energy. And it's not that that should be the focus of the movement, but it gives people a specific project, and sometimes that's enough to get one or two people in a school to be able to organize 20 people in a school and be able to make a presentation to a principal, a superintendent. It's enough to get a whole bunch of people dealing with Hunter's College and saying, yeah, we could make that kind of a switch.
Yeah, solar schools. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of us preparing for the strike, what we did was something very similar to what our caller said of setting up school reps and making sure that they're organizing within their schools. So we're still coordinating potential projects, getting ready for our next mobilization. But if you either already have a school rep in your school and you're in New York City, or you are interested in becoming a school rep and organizing within your communities, we have our next meeting tomorrow. Today's Tuesday. So tomorrow from 6 to 8 at 2 West 64th Street, which is Central Park West and 64th. And I've said this earlier, we're going to try to diversify where we're going because we really understand that it's really difficult if you're in the Bronx or Queens, for example, to get to Central Park. So we really want to make this as accessible as possible. But for this week, we will be into West 64th if you are able to make it.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think I found one of the most effective way to organize is within your school community is on issues that you know affect only your school and your classmates. I find that you know that can be a really great way to get people motivated and to get people involved. And I would also encourage people to do research into your school, see where their money is coming from and where their money is going. Look at the background of the administrations because a lot of schools, both public and private, do a lot of shady things that they don't want the students to know about.
Yeah, and even kind of similar to what this is happening on the, you know, climate strike utilities, like, is the money that you're sending to Con Ed or National Grid going to ripping up your street for a new frack gas pipeline, or is it going for geothermal and things that we should be spending? And you know, a lot of people in New York City, depending on where you live, like, don't even know some of their neighbors. So on every level, organizing in your communities is where it's at. And we have another caller on the line. Caller, you are now live on WBAI.
Hi, hello. The idea that you can't, like, have a singular leader, you know, because you just either cut the head off or misdirect the head and the whole thing goes. But plus it's a group effort. You know, with the whole thing there, is very true. But I was wondering, with the, I was just wondering, is anybody looking into when we do get off, if we ever do, God, you know, hope we do get off these fossil fuels? All this pipelines that we have strapped across the state are in areas presently now that are either flooded or being droughted, whichever happens to be the day. They say Texas or Houston, you got all those pipelines coming out of there, going somewhere, you know, up north where there's a ton of drought. So you get 5 feet of water. Say we get rid of the fuel, fossil fuel, and turn it into water. Because water's going to be a commodity greater than oil soon. And that's what they're setting it up for, by poisoning our water sources with fracking and glyphosate, you know, Roundup. To poison our water supply so that could be a new oil. When they get out of oil, they're going to go into the water business. They already are doing that. Well, my point is that those pipelines could become such needed diversions of water to areas. You know what I mean? We should be thinking about, like, you know, when we do ever get out of this stupid phase that we're in, where we're fighting over buried treasure, you know, let these rich people, you know, the kings take away the treasure, you know, like we used to do in the days of old. But if we ever make it out of that, it would be nice to use those, you know, pipelines for water distribution to, you know, out the area.
Yeah, personally, I don't know enough about the, you know, engineering, if we can take those kind of pipelines and convert them. But I do know for a fact that a lot of people that work on those, a lot of those union job pipe fitter jobs, can very easily be switched over to doing things like geothermal, installing air source heat pumps. And that's, you know, the conversations that we need to be having. And just kind of maybe one final thought before we end, you know, as the caller brought up, and we brought up before, you know, not having this all kind of be on one singular person, but also kind of breaking down some of the silos of organizing. I read that Greta was very inspired by the students of Parkland who walked out of school. And I actually, like, went to that high school. And so, like, my biggest, I don't know, I kind of have this, like, horrible vision of, like, those kids are going to finally, like, get guns out of school, and then Stoneman Douglas is going to go underwater because it's, you know, in South Florida. So how do we kind of break this down? And, you know, are you working with other youth movements around things like gun violence and immigration?
Yeah, so we need to realize that the climate crisis isn't isolated from these issues. At the end of the day, it is an issue regarding everything. So that covers housing, that covers health, and anything that everybody's fighting for. And immigration is another really big topic. Climate migrants, they made an estimate, I believe it was over 20 million. I don't know the exact estimate, but that's more than we've seen war refugees. And climate migrants are being forced out of their homes. And we've seen that these are also people, these are disproportionately people of color and lower socioeconomic backgrounds. So to actually solve the climate crisis and to make sure that we're the most effective going forward, we need to unite together with other causes and not look at the climate crisis as a let's capture all the carbon from the air. Because once, if we're in that mindset, honestly, why are we even fighting? We need to make sure that everybody is involved, that every issue is understood, that the connections are understood. And we are continuing to do that, and we are doing that now. And going forward, we're going to get more and more people to the table to make sure that their voices are heard, that their issues are heard, and that we can actually make a difference.
Alex, any thoughts on that? And also next steps for people who might want to get involved in organizing on this?
Yeah, so, you know, YGSA focuses on a number of different issues, you know, climate definitely being one of them. But I think it's important to remember that, you know, we talk about immigration, we talk about healthcare and things like that. But if our climate's intact, none of that matters. I think a lot of what socialist organizing is fighting for ultimately a better world and a better future. But we can't have this better world if we don't have a climate that's intact. You know, if it doesn't matter how, you know, strong we are and how much we fight against capitalism, if once we defeat capitalism, you know, the world's falling apart. But, you know, in terms of organizing, I would encourage every young person, every college student to be involved in this issue, because really, if we're not the ones getting involved, you know, no one's going to do it for us. Adults and politicians have shown time and time again that they don't have our best interest in mind. And when I organize for YDSA, a lot of people tell me, I'm the only one at my school that cares about this issue. I'm the only socialist at my school. And what I found is that's almost always not true. There is always at least one other person who shares these issues, who shares these concerns. You may not know it, they may not know it, but they exist. So, you know, find other people, and, you know, we're only going to defeat this thing if we're united.
Can I add?
Yeah. And also, where can people find out what's next for Fridays for Future?
Exactly. So, so for Fridays for Future, if you're in New York City, definitely follow us on Instagram. That's fff.nyc. Once again, that's fff.nyc. We send all our updates on there, so please give us a follow. And I just also want to make sure that it's understood that you don't have to get involved in Fridays for Future. You don't have to get involved in YDSA. You don't have to get involved in any of the organizations we're part of right now. There are organizations, there are things that if you want to get involved in organization, there are dozens. Just make sure you're doing something that you're passionate about, because this fight is only successful if you're doing something you care about and doing it in a way that is really using your talents. And whether that's part of an organization, whether that's part of FFF, YDSA, please go for it. If it's individual action, if it's talking to your friends, talking to your family, calling your representatives, striking outside by yourself, please just take some sort of action. But once again, if you're interested in Fridays for Future New York City, you are more than welcome to join, and we would love to have you. And that's fff.nyc. And we'll be having an open meeting tomorrow from 6 to 8 at 2 West 64th Street.
And if you're interested in the Public Power campaign, New York City Eco-Socialists will be hosting a town hall at Brooklyn College on the 7th of October at 6:30. You've been listening to Revolutions Per Minute, and we will catch you next week.